First of all, let's begin at the beginning. Today is Sunday, February 7th, 2016, and it's a very rainy Sunday in Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, it's not cold enough for it to snow, and tomorrow the rain should end by midday, so we should be in for a nice Rosh Chodesh Be'ezrat Hashem on Tuesday, Wednesday. Notice that you have Kriyat HaTorah four straight days, which I would imagine for weekdays is probably the record. You can't have it any more than that. Number one. Number two, I want to mention very sadly, my wife got an email earlier today. Professor Aaron Kirschenbaum was buried this afternoon, or buried today. I mention a name that probably not many of you recognize. This is his autobiography, which just came out within the last year, and I went to visit him, and his wife was ill, but he seemed to be okay. But the way life works is once one mate gets ill, the health keeper or the carekeeper generally dies before. Inevitably, you see it all the time. And I want to dedicate today's shir. Rabbi Kirschenbaum was a very fascinating individual. He came from a typical American home that I recognized from my youth, with some folk feeling of religion, but not really a concept of halacha. And he sought and searched, and he winds up first a Zionist, and then he winds at Herzliya, then he winds up at the Jewish Theological Seminary. And then he winds up studying in Torah Vedas and coming to the Rev Sherman YU. He's already on the JTS faculty. And it's a famous story with the Rev, when people were complaining to the man who ran the yeshiva, Mr. Norman B. Abrams, that there are too many people in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class. So Mr. Abrams came in, and he looked around, and he had Rabbi Soloveitchik. They called every name, who belongs there, who doesn't belong there. A lot of young people were sneaking in. And he finally gets to Rabbi Kirschenbaum, Aaron Kirschenbaum, and the Rav asks him, "And who are you?" And he says, "Rebbe, I'm a faculty member at the seminary, and I'd like to sit in on your classes." And the Rav said, "You are my special guest." And he studied with the Rav for a number of years. He came in Aliyah. He was professor of Mishpat Ivri at Tel Aviv University. Very learned Jew, a tremendous matmid. Didn't waste a minute. You have no idea. This person, he could be walking in the street reading a sefer. Big Talmud Chacham, tremendous Yirei Shamayim. I believe there were six children. I taught one of his daughters at Michala. The family is totally split, because the boys started on the west side in what's it called? The Yeshiva Katana? Moshe, do I have it right, Moshe? What's the west side yeshiva called? Not Manhattan Day School. What's it called? It has a name, Yeshiva of the... Okay, so I just gave the right name, that's all. You live there, I'm only talking from afar. It was called, so the boys went to the Yeshiva Ktana, and when they came here, they became real Litvisha, I imagine, Degel HaTera, not Zionist. The girls all were religious Zionists, A number one. So it's mamish, a split family with a lot of kavod hadadi, and Baruch Hashem, the split is, if you know what's going on in Israel, in 50 years, that split won't be there anymore, Be'ezrat Hashem. But it's a process.
Michlala okay. Was
more
Tzionia at that time?
Excuse me?
Michlala was more Tzionia at that time?
Michlala, the student body of the regular Michlala, has always been more Tzionia. The foreign students program has gone through a long process of what they call in popular language charedizatzir, I'm told. But I'm out of Michlala since 85. But I know I meet girls from the foreign students program 30 years later now, more than 30 years later. And they say to me, "Rebbe, you made my year, you saved my life, if not for you," etc., etc. And I understand already that even in my time, many Rebbeim were not, some of them were ex-Bnei Kivaniks, who had become, l'ishtamesh b'milah b'yivrit meduberet, hitchasku. statement. And I look at it, if you become a tzioni dati, but a real tzioni dati, then that's the leitchazek, that's becoming a better Jew in my opinion. But okay, be it as it may, I dedicate this shiur very fondly in Rabbi Dr. Professor Aaron Kirschenbaum's memory. He published a great deal, and he was a perfect synthesis of nishas and paiskim in knowledge and mishpat avri, a more scientific approach, a more contemporary approach for contemporary Israeli society. And this autobiography that he wrote for his family, it's not available for sale. He had to give it to you. It was written essentially for his grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Is a very, very fascinating document and description of America that was and is no more, for better or for worse. It's a different America today. I don't say it's better. There's much more assimilation today in intermarriage, but certainly there's a lot more Torah in America. All right. Now, today's shiur, the first part of the shiur will blow your mind, as you will see, as it blew my mind. But we're using Reb Menashe Klein. He opens the world to us. The problems, we don't have to agree with his psakim, but he raises issues that we must think about. So we saw last week he discussed, first of all, whether you need a mechitza in the shul when you have a drasha, and we saw that he says even in kindergarten in from areas they separate the children. Even if they don't separate them in kindergarten, from that point on, from time immemorial, everything has been separate. And he comes out, chas v'chalila, to have men and women sitting mixed in a synagogue, and we get involved. He spoke about how we don't open up a Beit Yaakov near a yeshiva. That led us into a whole discussion of Stern College and Yeshiva College, where time and again there were attempts to move them near each other simply for the sake of monetary reasons, which you can understand. It's a lot easier to support one campus than to have two entirely different campuses. And even in YU, in my time as a Rebbe, and later in the 70s when I already lived in Israel, the Rosh Yeshiva were against moving Stern College in proximity to Yeshiva College. And he goes so far that he even discusses the time he came into a hotel in Jerusalem, and when he saw there was no mechitza, I trust there was separate seating, it's not clear from what he wrote, but I would imagine it's the King's Hotel, not the King's, it's probably, what was that hotel called? The Central Hotel. The Central Hotel in Geula, right near Meir Sharim, which was the first real Frum Hotel in Israel. There was one more Frum Hotel at that time. Anyone know where in Tel Aviv? The Deborah Hotel. The Deborah Hotel was built by Frum people. Until today, I believe the Rambam Library is in the Deborah Hotel, and there's a kollel there that's still supported by money left by the people who built it or the family that built it. I don't think the hotel today is Haredi, it's just a hotel under good hashkacha. But you can see the imprints of what was. The Central Hotel, of course, remains a Haredi enclave, a very nice hotel, and with a mikveh in it and all that goes with it. So Rav Menashe Klein walked in and walked out, and he boasts about it. I don't know, it's a little hard for me to accept that, because what was the impression it left with the people? But okay, they can understand he's from a different world. I remember once inviting Rav Yeruchim Gerelik. I was making a siyum in Bnei Akiva on the Sechet Megillah, as I recall. And I invited my Rebbe, Rav Yeruchim Gerelik, to come and speak. And he came, and he was very upset that there were girls there. But they were behind the mechitza; it was in his shul. But he was upset that there were men and women there. You know, I told him this is Bnei Akiva, and his mindset couldn't tolerate it. As I told you, he was the one who fought with the Rav, with Reb Menachem Mendel Zaks, and Reb Yerchan Gerelik fought with the Rav over the dean's reception. Fine. And finally, I said to you last week that it's interesting to see Torah Tidbits, that in Torah Tidbits you see very clearly that some speakers insist upon separate seating, some will teach a mixed class, and some will be for women only or for men only, not even in the same room at the same time. There are different lectures geared to different sexes. All right, Harashut Natuna, I don't have a perfect answer. Someone from America wrote to me, what happened at the Rav Shayurim, public Shayurim? Were they mixed? And the answer is, I can't really answer, because in the 50s, women didn't come to public Shayurim. They were not on that level, you understand? The Rav gave a Yotzeit Shir, to quote the Gemara, what would women be doing there? You follow? They were not on that level. It was a different world. Then, when the Rav gave his shir at the Moria, then their women did come. But that was a synagogue setup where the men sat on one side of the machitza and the women sat on the other. If I recall correctly, the machitza was behind the men, and women sat there. It could be they pulled up the curtain. That I'm working with memory and I wasn't there that many times. But if anyone can correct me or can give us a living description, I recall that there were women, and I even remember there was one Rav in Brooklyn, Rabbi Pomerantz. Rabbi Pomerantz was a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, was a tremendous Talmud Chacham Yerei Shemayim. He had, if I'm not mistaken, 3 daughters. He had no sons. And he put all his learning into these 3 girls, and they all married. They're all big Talmidot Chachamot, who married Talmidei Chachamim. And I know that the Rav, I think it's on tape, where you hear the Rav is explaining a difficult sitya, and someone from the audience makes a comment, and the Rav says to him, what do you think, this is an easy sugya? This is a sugya that the Pomerantz girls understand. You follow? The Rav knew they were there, and he knew the level they were on. So then, of course, in the 1970s, where the Rav gave public talks, and there's a crowd from Stern College, I was not there. I was in Israel already. So someone from America would have to tell us whether there was separate seating. I do remember that at the Hesped for the Brisker Rav, when the right wing, there was a lot of tension before the Hesped and during the Hesped and after the Hesped, because the Rav's family went 2 different ways. The Rav, the American branch, became great religious Zionists, and the Israeli branch became basically beyond Satmar, basically bedfellows of Eda Charedit in the full sense of the word, maybe even the Turakata to a certain degree. So there's a lot of tension. How can the Rav be Maspid, his uncle, in a Mokum Tumor in Yeshiva University? And there I remember distinctly, to avoid any problem, the women sat upstairs. In Lampert Auditorium, there's an upstairs little section. That's where the women sat. And there's a lot more that happened that day, but I've spoken about it in the past. It would take too much time now.
Saturday night shearing in Boston.
I wish Yitz were here. We could ask him. That's a very good question. What about the Saturday? I don't know. I was never there. I don't know. I can't answer. I know on Tisha B'Av when the Rav spoke, if I recall, it was separate. It was separate. I was there once in 78. So I really can't answer. But anyway, the next question, we ended off the class. Very, very fascinating. The question was asked by Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. As I mentioned to you right now with the big machleket over Tamar Epstein, and the machleket doesn't go away, it still continues, And the computer adds to it. You see, before the computer, you had a psak, that was your rav, all right? It didn't become, go into the gossip columns of every newspaper. Today with the computer, it goes all over the world and everyone comments on it. And everyone has a say, and everyone is a chacham, and everyone can give you a psak halacha in an issue which is really, you got to be a big talmud chacham to understand, to have input, to have a feeling for the sheila. And the machloket goes on and on and on. It's sad, but all right, that's the reality in which we live. Wars are fought. Every day we have killers, people attempting to kill us, all because of the social framework in which we live, known as the computer, the internet. Now, what's fascinating here is the question, can you teach women in the synagogue. And why is there a question if you can teach women? Because some of them are crocheting, are knitting, and Rabbi Greenblatt says he's giving shayurim dafka in Shmirat HaLashon. Why he's giving shayurim in Shmirat HaLashon? Because women are dapraniyot, women gossip. I threw out last week the question, how would contemporary women relate to that comment, women gossip, and men don't gossip? On the other hand, Rakefet made a very interesting point. No one has been able to refute me. All the columns you read, the gossip columns, and every newspaper has a full page. I don't understand it. Because some famous actress is eating lunch. You take a picture of her eating lunch. Ich verstehe das nicht. The Queen, I don't know if you know, there's a rule in England where you come from, you're not allowed to photograph the Queen when she's eating. Are you aware of that? And that's natural dignity. A person that is a normal human being. He eats, he drinks, he sleeps, he goes to the bathroom. He's a normal human being. What are you taking pictures? Take a picture, begadluta. So all these gossip pages are invariably women. And maybe Rabbi Griebenblatt is right. I throw it out for analysis. So he asked the question, thinking it's a chilul kvod beit hakneset if women are going to be crocheting kippot, knitting sweaters for their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, etc. Fine. Reb Menashe Klein throws the book at him. You're asking a question about Kavod Beit HaKnesset. What are women doing in the shul altogether? Isha b'Beit Regesh, Shlosh Shechiach. And here he quotes the Gemara. We ended off the class last week, the Gemara in Moed Katan. A very fascinating Gemara that one of the Amorayim was cutting his nails in the Beit Medrash, in the Beit Knesset, and throwing the nails on the floor. And the whole reason you're not allowed to throw nails on the floor is a sakana for pregnant women. So why should you throw nails on the floor in the Beit Medrash? Maybe a pregnant woman will be there. And the Gemara answers, Isha Beveit Midrasha Lo Shechicha. And out of that, and the Gemaras we spoke about last week, Reb Menashe Klein reaches a decision, a conclusion, Dani, women have no place in a shul. And you're giving lectures? All right, but this is just the beginning. And now, gentlemen, I come to, I couldn't believe it. I looked at it, I researched it. Reb Menashe Klein cites a source. He doesn't realize what a bombshell he is throwing our way. And I just want to say a few words of introduction. And as usual, the student who I want to talk to is not here. Very flirting. Alex was here before, walked out. I don't know, last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, I spoke about Chochmat Yisrael. Now, Chochmat Yisrael is very important for you to understand, because generally in a yeshiva, you walk away with the attitude, Chochmat Yisrael, Yimach Shmam V'Zichrom, it's like a shtissel. Shtissel, I love shtissel. I just saw the fourth episode of the second year. I don't have enough time. My uncle likes to watch it every night, but I can't squeeze it in every night. But I love it. I just wish it was entirely in Yiddish. I'm sorry, Simon, but the Yiddish, it is so... I love it. It's my youth.
It's,
yeah. No, I understand. But I apologize to you because you want it in Hebrew. But I love it. So if you notice, Shalomka's brother, whenever he mentions the Zionist under his breath, he curses them. The Rishayim, Rishayim, Tzionim, Rishayim, Tzionim, Rishayim, Tzionim, Arurim, Tzionim, Arurim. You know, it's like it's the perfect world in which he comes from, and he does it so beautifully. It's just amazing. I love it. Okay.
And the actor is
Sfardi, the one who plays his brother. He's Sfardi,
yeah.
But his Yiddish is fabulous.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He's like Shaki Ophir playing Azulai HaShoter. You follow, go and dream that Shaki Ophir was raised in Meir Sharim. And you know, he came from a frum home. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Ach, Shaki Ophir. It's a big loss when he died. But anyway, coming back here. So when you come out of yeshiva, generally you have the attitude, Chachmat Yisrael, Rishoyim Arurim, you know? No, you should know. Chachmat Yisrael, I can't, again, I gave lecture. I can't go into all my lectures now, it would take another half year. But you should understand, Chachmat Yisrael was a result of the Enlightenment, where you saw an outside world of a scientific approach. And what Chachmat Yisrael did, it brought a scientific approach to our sacred sources. Now, it's fascinating. The original people involved with Chachmat Yisrael were Maskilim. And the person who's given credit for establishing it, Leopold Suntz, Yontav Lippmann Suntz, was at one point a Reformed Jew. But you see, when you deal with Torah sources, you can't remain a Reformed Jew. He came back and he made his home kosher. He was not Machal of Shabbos. People attacked him. Suntz, Kashrut, old-fashioned. In the 19th century, 99% of the people who dealt with Chochmat Yisrael were Shomer Shabbos, but they were historic. In other words, the Reform, the conservative movement, those of you familiar with all the literature, I quoted this in class in great depth, but Moshe Davis did his doctorate, the emergence of the conservative movement. He's no longer alive. He taught at Hebrew U. He was a very interesting individual and very helpful to me in my own research on Reb Lazer Silva. So Moshe Davis claims that people like Zachariah Frankel and others in Berlin, in Vienna, that these people were the forerunners of the conservative movement. Now, there is some truth to that. Solomon Schechter, in other words, because what did the conservative movement, what did it introduce? To put it on a very popular level, historic approach to Judaism. An historic approach to Judaism means that every generation added or changed Judaism in conformity with its reality. This is what Solomon Schechter called Catholic Israel. Catholic Israel means universal Israel, universal Jewish people. And Solomon Schechter wrote essays, and you got to remember, who was Solomon Schechter? Shnur Zalman Schechter. He was a sheikhet from a Chabad home. His father was a sheikhet, I should say. And he developed this whole idea that the people are the final arbiters of halacha. You just spoke in the previous class with Rabbi Bednash. What do you do when there's a Yeshomrim, Yeshomrim, Yeshomrim? So the conservative movement, the classic conservative movement, would have no problem. We follow what the people want. Alex, I'm looking for you. I'm talking to you now. You got to pick up what I just spoke about it. So that was Solomon Schechter. If you follow it through logically, there's nothing left of Judaism, which ultimately happened less than 100 years after his death. In other words, if you're going to put it to a vote, well, the first thing they threw out was mikveh. We have bathtubs in America. We have baths. We have showers. Today we have jacuzzis. Who needs a mikveh? Shabbat they threw out. Who can travel? Who can walk so far? The tshuva, early 50s. Written by three people raised in Orthodox yeshivat, permitting driving to shul on Shabbos. Kashrut, you're traveling. You can go into a restaurant and eat fish. The kelim areinu ben yomo. All right, ultimately, and take a look, homosexuality. They asked the student at the seminary, New York Times interviewed him, that must be about 15 years ago. And they said, how can you change a sentence in the Torah? It's an abomination. He answers, I love this thing. He says, this is not the first sentence we changed. We changed other sentences so we can change this too. What's fascinating today is that in Chachmat Yisrael, I can say I know of maybe one exception. I'll tell you the exception in a moment. Everyone involved in Chachmat Yisrael is a Ben Torah, 100%. It's Shasim Paiskim.
Academic Jewish studies?
I'm talking about academic Jewish studies, not what you're calling academic, what I'm calling the research on the highest level in Shas and Paiskim. When they approach it from a point of view of Chachmat Yisrael, and I'll explain myself, I'll give you the example I'm leading into. But I'm not talking general academic studies. I'm not so stupid. I know who's teaching here, where, there, everywhere. I'm talking about people who know. As a matter of fact, so many Frum people are involved that it has greatly harmed the universities. Meaning, you'll take the state of Israel, Chachmat Yisrael practically has next to no students working for academic degrees, because many of the yeshivat chesda have opened up advanced tracks, like you take Herzl College, where you can do advanced study with a Chachmat Yisrael approach. Sfarim are coming out today. The Maram Mirotenberg, I believe it's a fellow who studied in Alon Shvut, in edited edition, that's exactly what Chachmat Yisrael is all about. So that I've seen the Sfat Emet has come out in an edited edition from a yeshiva chesda. It's very fascinating what has happened. Now, you see, what's the difference between Chachmat Yisrael and what I call traditional or classic Talmud Torah? And here I'll throw out a simple question. When I study in the morning, I have to make three brachot, la'asok b'divrei Torah, v'harev, uvachabanu. No, when you study Chachmat Yisrael, do you have to make brachot? Absolutely. It's the same Talmud Torah. It's a different approach. But it is mamash kiyum of Talmud Torah.
And some may argue.
Some may argue, fine. I'll give you an example in a second. From our point of view, from Bernard Rebel Graduate School point of view, from Alon Shvut, from Herzog point of view, when you learn how to edit the manuscript, thank God we had tzuns in the world that opened up this type of study to us. Look at the Talmudical Encyclopedia. Talmudical Encyclopedia, you know what their role model was? Rabbi Hutner told me, Rabbi Yeshua Hutner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Encyclopedia Britannica. Take a look at the two, the way they treat topics, and you'll see how the Talmudica is based upon the Britannica. And the Talmudica is an absolute example of Chachmat Yisrael on the highest level possible. But it is fabulous.
Rebbe,
but hold on. I want to show you a concrete example. Now, so why am I saying this? Rabbi Menashe Klein has a commentary. He quotes a source. This source is epic making. And he quotes the Hatashbetz. And in parentheses, he has Talmid Maharam Mirotenberg. In little parentheses, then he goes further. Fine. If you're coming from the point of view of Talmud Torah, and you're learning the Tshuvot, like you're learning, let's say, Yabi Ome, Igrot Moshe, you don't go further. You take a look. He's quoting something. He's quoting a Tashbetz. Fine. A Rishon. Talmud of the Maram Mirotenberg. A Rishon. But when you want to look a little deeper, I saw him quoting this Tashbetz. I said, well, who is this? What is this? I know the Tashbetz. I've quoted the Tashbetz many, many times over the generations. That's the Duran family. Edot HaMizrach, Megushrei Sfarad. Here you're quoting a Tashbetz, and the Tashbetz is a Talmud of the Maram Mirotenberg. What are we talking about here? When my mother died, Zichrono Livracha, 2011, so my brother and I, living here, decided we each made a certain contribution in her memory. So my brother has a son who's a Rosh Yeshiva, Rosh Kollel, another son-in-law who heads up Kollelim for post-army people, So we had where to put the money. I put it into gris, buying svarim for the library. Among the svarim I bought, a four-volume set that was published by Bar Ilan University, Kuntres Hatshuvot HaChadash, by an individual named Shmuel Glick. Now, this was co-published by Schechter Institute of Jewish Studies, which is Machon Schechter, in Yerushalayim, which is a branch of the conservative movement, but I have to say, a more traditional branch. Those of you who know the history, it's headed up by Rabbi David Galinkin, who's my student from BMT. He's the son of a conservative rabbi, the grandson of an Orthodox rabbi who was an Av Beit Din in Boston. And he's a very, David himself is a Shomer Shabbos, a Shomer Mitzvah, 100%. I can testify, he doesn't miss a minyan. I catch him sometimes at the Shtiblach when he's running by. He'll come in for Mincha, Marav, whenever it is. Now, these four volumes are fantastic. It gives you biography and bibliographical material on every last volume of responsa literature. And you found me, Avraham? And I explored it. And now I can add a great deal to three little words in Reb Menashe Klein, Tashbetz, in parentheses, Talmud Shel, and it's abbreviated. You got to know what the abbreviation stands for. Maram Mirutenberg. Without the Bar Ilan Sefer, without the Bar Ilan computer index where they have all these tshuvot, I would never know what that abbreviation stands for. It's the Maram Mirutenberg. My dear friends, in the scholarly world, they would call this HaTashbetz HaKatan, to differentiate from the Tashbetz HaGadol. Reb Shimon Duran and his son wrote endless tshuvot. It is very basic to understanding the Mechaber and his Psakim and the Beit Yosef. The Tashbetz HaGadol is quoted hundreds of times. It plays a crucial role in the ongoing process of Sfadik Halacha. Notice the words I use, you understand? Ongoing process, those are good words. It's a very apt description. The Tashbetz HaKatan is very important in the Ashkenazic world. Why is it important? It's a small sefer. It was written by Reb Shamshon ben Sadok, not Reb Shimon ben Sedek, but Reb Shamshon, not Reb Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, but Reb Shamshon ben Sadok, a Talmud of the Maram of Rutenberg. And this little work contains 590 rulings, psakim, recorded by his Talmud, Psakim of the Maram Mirutenberg. And I need not tell you, the Maram Mirutenberg is one of the preeminent authorities in Ashkenazic halacha and a source for many halachot that are codified by the Ramah. And you see now the difference, a very simple example. If I'm just learning Talmud Torah, it's enough to say, I saw it in this tshuva. Okay, Tashbetz. But if you have a feeling for history, to understand who, what, when, where, that's where someone like Glick from Bar Ilan, what this man did, four magnificent volumes with an additional volume of introduction, what responsive literature is all about, it opens your eyes. So there's the Tashbetz Katan, the Tashbetz Gadol. Now, you follow me, Alex? I'm just giving you an example. I know...
there's just two comments, and we can discuss this more in depth outside class, but two comments. One,
So my main field in academic Jewish studies is philosophy and mysticism.
No, we're not talking about that now.
Right. But so like if you're studying, for example, you're reading Gershom Scholem on the Zohar, that's not Talmud Torah.
No, I mean,
it could be that you'll derive some insights that you
No, say that. We don't quibble. I knew Gershom Scholem. Once was at a wedding with him and they was davening mincha and he didn't know how to say Kedusha, or he wasn't interested in saying Kedusha.
Probably he didn't know how to.
I was shocked. I don't know. 1969. Okay.
I think he had a period in his youth when he was observed.
Could be. Okay.
But I did take a couple of classes in Revel with Dr. Ellman, and I can say very definitively, although it would be a longer discussion and so on, that even though there are many times when we're looking in literature of the Talmud, that the value base and orientation is radically different than when you're studying Torah, and I could not say that I don't think anybody would really be able to reasonably maintain that that's considered Talmud Torah.
Yeah, and you're talking about a Chaim Berlin graduate.
I know that.
He's a Chaim Berlin Muslim. He's a guy, when he davens milk, he takes off his tie and ties it around his waist for a gatel.
No, I understand, but he also lives a little bit of, he lives a little bit of a dual life by his own admission. So.
How is his health? He was hurt in a car crash.
I think he's recovering. I'm not sure. I haven't seen
him. No, that's a long time. How long ago did you study with him?
About 2 years ago.
And he walked normally?
He was getting better. He was
getting
not fully
better. Not yeah. fully. Okay. Guy. He's a great individual. Yes, I know. Yes, yes. His knowledge is unbelievable.
Yes.
And you know the story with him. He graduated. He came from a poor home. So he worked for Rabinovitz on Canal Street. Was a big book dealer, and this kid from Chaim Berlin knew every sefer, anything ever published. Had Elman, and Yankeler Elman, and he worked there, and everyone knew him, and somehow he wound up in graduate school, and he developed. Okay, I'm not
just talking about him though. I mean, I know another person I know who's getting a PhD in the same field, and there's tremendously interesting things that you can take from that area, and I think in theory there's a whole way in which you could reconstruct the field such that it becomes a part of Talmud Torah.
Okay.
But the way that the current paradigm, what you're saying is it
depends upon the teacher.
Not exclusively, because if
you studied with Aaron Kirschenbaum, it was certainly Talmud Torah, but he took a scientific historic approach, developed it throughout the ages. In other words, there is a difference. If you take Professor Elon's Mishpat Ivri, it's absolutely Talmud Torah, but it's vastly different than in a yeshiva where you're going to mix together poskim from the early Rishonic period to the later Rishonic period. You take Chaim Soloveitchik from my classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, you take his Yeinam. It's overwhelming, the man's mastery of Shas and Paiskim. Of course,
I think most people would doubt, no one would doubt that, even if somebody like Dr. Ellman, that he has tremendous knowledge of the source text, that's not in question. But when you're learning Torah, like if let's say you had a person, just as a thought experiment, who was an avowed atheist, but who was, either he had grown up from, or however it came about, he knew the literature backwards and forwards. So you would not say that he's doing Talmud Torah when he learns the sources, even if he could give you the correct shot in the way
okay.
that he learns
so
the
So I want to tell you, I fully agree with you.
Yeah.
It depends, but I don't want you to have the feeling that Chochmat Yisrael is treif pasul.
No, I don't think that's
my introduction, Yishoyim Arurim from Shtisel. Now, the one example I can give you, which shows that you can't give a blanket statement, is very simple. I had a very close friend, my closest friend in Israel. He's not here already, maybe 10 years already, I don't even remember. It's Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Grona, if you've ever heard, Professor Grona. Tzvi Grona, it's Leibel Grona's nephew from the Grona family. Tzvi went to BTA, he was a classmate of Steve Riskin, of Herbie Bravender, that's all that same Chabura. Alan Dershowitz, Dershowitz writes about him in his latest book, his autobiographical section. He describes his friends, Zvi Groner, how he would go to, I think I quoted in class, they would walk over to the Rebbe and have lunch, and the Rebbe would walk in and talk with them. It was before he became so busy, and these were nice Brooklyn kids. So Zvi, he lived near me, and his mother was Makarovas when we came in Aliyah, 69. Zvi got married late, finally got married. He's gone, she's gone, Kachazem. Okay. One time, Erev Yom Kippur, we're walking up the hill on Rehov Aset, Zvi and I, and out of the barbershop comes a very famous professor, Zussman. And he greets Zvi, you know, Zvi may have done his doctorate under him, or maybe he knew Zvi from Zvi's own research. Zvi was very big in Gaonica. His Sefer was published after his, while he was very ill, or right after his death, the Rabbi Taburi edited. It was a real chesed shalem, as Joseph Taburi, Professor Taburi, from Bar Ilan. It's brachot shenishtaku, brachot that we no longer use from the Tkufat HaGoyim, etc. So, and Zvi greets him this and that, and they exchange greetings. And it's Erev Yom Kippur. And Zvi said, you know who that was? That's Professor Zussman. He's Zussman, you recognize the name. It's a direct descendant of the Chatam Sofer. Okay? Zussman, big Hungarian rabbinic family. And Zvi tells me he knows all of Shas, Bavli Yerushalmi, backwards and forwards by heart. And I'm all impressed. And I mentioned that, but he walked out of the bar, he wasn't wearing a hat, he wasn't wearing a kippah. Zvi says, that's what you're worried about? Ask me if he fasts on Yom Kippur. Okay? You get the message. So that's, I agree. But on the other hand, you must agree that you can have a scientific approach and be a tzaddik yesod olam. But you look at it, your learning is from a different vantage point. But my own opinion is, and I've said this 1,000 times, I'll say it 1,001 now, I'm very opposed to taking a kid in high school. There's a whole debate here in Israel, Ravadim, it's in Israel, I don't know, you know what that means, layers, that they introduce Chochmat Israel when the kids learn Gemara Ravadim, and like Professor Avraham Weiss's Svarim, Avraham Weiss, that's Tzadik Yisod Olam, all his three children, all his descendants, are Shomrei Torah, Mitzvah, all live in Israel. I'm very opposed to it. I say, you got to first learn how to master Shas and Pai. Then if you want, it's not a chiyuv. I'm not going to criticize Reb Hershel Schachter because he doesn't have a doctorate from Bernard Rebbe. You follow me? If you want, Rabbi Rosenzweig has a doctorate. Rabbi Dr. Aaron Adler did it. They did very nice doctorates. They're more. But it's Habachiri Nitnar. Okay, gentlemen, with that introduction and that sideshow, now I want to come to what the Tashbates is saying. And I have no other way to explain it. And I think I have to thank Yomo here. He got me the tshuva from the Bar Ilan program. There's an institution called Lindenbaum. We have today a thrust feminism. And we all have to deal with these problems. Unfortunately, I have to deal with it almost on a daily basis. Students are out in the rap in it, and the milieu has been created. If there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. I need not tell you that goes against the very core of our belief that Torah is given at Sinai and is a divine system. Law, general law, the part of being a toshav, the Supreme Court changes law at will. You all understand the Supreme Court can do whatever it wants, and that's general law. But the social factors influence them, economic factors, but Torah Hashem Tamima. All right, so now the women come along, and women are learned today, and there's no way you're going to be able to achieve what Rabbi Mordechai Willick wrote about, Chaval, that we teach women Talmud and Poskim. You can't change back the clock. women. It's a different world today. We have to, on the Toshav level, it's a different world. It's like my grandchildren tell me, or my daughters tell me, women have to work today. One salary cannot support a family. All right. I don't know if this is true in America, but it's certainly true in Medinat Yisrael for 90%, 99% of the people, unless they come from a very wealthy home. You think they always work?
They just didn't work out the house.
They worked in the house fine. All I know is my father considered it a disgrace when my mother went to work after World War II. We weren't allowed to tell anyone that my mother was working. And my mother was very successful. She was very capable. But fine, be it as it may. Women are learning. Women go to college. Women go to graduate school. They're women who want to learn Torah. All right? So the women know the sources. So
In my time,
they didn't teach Talmud as Talmud. But today, way beyond Michalá, there are many places teaching Talmud, and I mentioned...
No, I'm just giving you an example.
No.
You don't have to follow that model.
No, but say that. I know Michalá, I taught there. It may be very different today. I taught there 15 years, but it's a long time ago. Fine. Rabbi Koopman just died, by the way, and there's going to be a memorial on a Sunday. I can't go to it, obviously, but I'll dedicate this year in his memory. He has tremendous skuyot. So... coming back here, women will say to you, why can't we say Sheva Brachot? What's wrong with Sheva Brachot? I was Masada Kedushin from my grandson a few weeks ago, and the family is very big in the Tzioni Dati community that he married into, and they're very big with the approach to Tanakh, Govai Nayim, if you know what I'm talking about. And they wanted women to speak under the chuppah, all right, the mother wants to speak. I agreed. They wanted afterwards a kitzur haktubah, read in a little Hebrew, a kitzur. I absolutely said I can't agree. It may be halachically correct, could be there's nothing wrong with it, but I'm a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, and my Rebbe would not be happy with me, period. But you see, these are problems. Then a woman will say to you, why can't I make one of those Sheva Brachot? No, you're hearing this all the time. Another woman will say, why can't I be Masada Kedushin? What's wrong? Siddha Kedushin, basically the Chatan should say the Brachot. Who should say the Brachot? But all right, we have a minute today to avoid all problems. The Rav is Masada Kedushin. We hold him to be a Talmud Chacham, as proper Radim. Then you'll get involved with the problem. Why can't there be an Eda? And you're going to have terrible, tremendous halachic problems right down the line. Where do you draw the line? Fine. Now, Lindenbaum, which has a reputation as being on the cutting edge of feminism within the halacha, I hope. Some of you have wives who went there, or know people who went there. Why is it named Lindenbaum? When it began as Brabender's, Herbie Brabender, Chaim Brabender began. Chaim Brabender, very interesting individual, YU graduate, PhD in Tel Aviv University, I believe, very knowledgeable, and very innovative in education, has a lot of skuyot on the Israeli scene. Fine. So the name changes to Lindenbaum. The Lindenbaum family gave a lot of money, and I know the family well. As a matter of fact, one of the Lindenbaums, both of them were my classmates or a year apart. One was certainly my classmate. I just spoke in the home of one of the grandsons of the Lindenbaum family, Amiel Lindenbaum, who's my student. I just spoke in his home, and it was you had to be by invitation only. That's why I gave the talk on raising Jewish children. How can we be sure the children will be ours? It's on the website. It was a Thursday night. I got a letter. I told you, why did I tell you? I got a letter very upset that you, Rebbe, you said in Shir you gave 11 talks in Florida. Why are only 6 on the website? So I wrote back to this virtual student, there's only one problem. The other 5 talks were given on Shabbos. 3 were given in Hollywood and 2 were given in North Miami Beach. So Bella Lindenbaum, I don't believe she's alive. She, if I'm not mistaken, the last year or two she died. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm mistaken. She was a real feminist. and she was on the cutting edge. And then I heard there was a Brit in the family, and she was the Sandikayet, whatever you want to call it, in Matan Hebrew. So now I want to ask a question. A woman wants to be the Sandik. It's her grandchild, her great-grandchild. She wants to be the Sandik. Giddy, what do you say? What do you say? This is a serious question. This is not the Sadik edition. Maybe you can make a case to say no. Yeah, you can say that people will then have women as a dot, and they can't be a dot for Kiyum Hadava. If this is not a Dinei Mamonet, this is not a Takana of the Chief Rabbinate, that women can testify on monetary issues, etc. This is Bira, this is Kiyum Hadava, not Bira Hadava. But a woman wants to be a Sadikayet. And boy, I remember sitting with people who knew her, and I know them well, and these are very traditional people with deep Hasidic roots, dear friends of mine, and boy, they were appalled. And, you know, I also wasn't happy. Although you can make a case, what about a woman being a mohel, a mohelet, whatever we would call it, who did the circumcision on Moshe Rabbeinu's sons? Snooki, tell me, what do you say, Alex? Tzipora did the circumcision, right or wrong? She was furious at her husband. Why did you wait so long? She did the circumcision. But a sas on the card, this day and age, oh boy. Gentlemen, here is a tshuva from the Tashbetz HaKatan, where women were no hagot. It was evidently common, not unheard of, the Middle Ages, to be the Sandikayet at a Brit. What a source. Sefer Tashbetz Katan, Siman Shin Tzadi Zayin. Print out, thanks to Yomo, from the Bar Ilan computer. This has to be in the 1 second. I would say the 1300s. 12 into the 13. Let's see if you give a more exact year. Of course, the Tashbetz was published long after the author died. It was published the first time in 1556. But this is a tshuva he's quoting from the Maram Mirottenberg. You're going back much earlier. And the Maram says, I couldn't believe my eyes. I don't think it's a kosher practice, mina kasher, shenohagim berov mekomot, sha'isha yoshevet beveit ha'kneset im anashim, that the woman sits in the shul with men, and I quote, umalin chatinok b'cheka. You can't escape. I try to think maybe it means she pushes in, you know, pushes up close. No, the little boy is in her lap. All right, I've been a sandik many times already. And you know, you hold the kid in your lap. Believe me, if you're a sandik, you have to be certain your hands aren't shaking. That's number one. And two, that the sight of blood doesn't shock you. You understand? That's the famous story with Reb Chaim. You know what I'm talking about? Reb Chaim Briska. The Rav always asked the question, how is my name Reb Yosef Dov? No? Who's he named for? His great-grandfather. Tell me, Minig Yisrael, who gets to name the first child born? The woman. She went through labor the first time. It's life-changing for her. It's so difficult. She gets the schut to name the first child. So the Rav said, Moshe, I'm telling the Rav what the Rav said. Don't argue with me. We're talking Ashkenazim, please. When did the Rav become like Yosef Chaim? What was his last name? Our Talmud, Yosef Chaim. What was his last name? Anyone remember Yosef Chaim? We're talking Ashkenazim. So the Rav said, how did I get my great-grandfather's name? Because my father, Reb Moshe, came to my mother, Rebbetzin Pesha, and she said to Rebbetzin Pesha, he said to Rebbetzin Pesha, he said it in Yiddish, obviously, listen, my daughter-in-law, my father has no one named for him. I'm always afraid to be a Sunday because I can't stand the sight of blood. But if you will agree to name the baby after my father, I will agree to be the Sandik at the Brit. And the Rav Sandik was his grandfather, Reb Chaim, and that's how he got the name Yosef Dov. And here you see, Malin Chatima Pucheka, V'afilu in Bala Mohel Oaviha Obana. And even if you say it's family, the moral is her father or her son. It's a grandson she's holding in her lap. Love, listen to this. The love urcha likanesi sham kushetet bein hanashim ubifnei hashrina. Wow, isham kushetet, gentlemen. Shehashirim has always been around. By the way, his name is Kersola, Yosef Chaim Kersola. That's what I was talking about. He was a Talmud in the Kola, I think 3 years he was here.
He was a Talmud, he was here 3 years, but he was here a long time ago.
It's before your time. Okay. Kersola, yeah, Yosef, he was a sweetheart. I am so angry at him for not coming in Aliyah. You have no idea.
Well, maybe he's doing something good.
Alex, you want to do good, you do it here.
No.
What you do here is 10 times more powerful
than
what you do
God
there.
God forbid. Many people should be going back to America to be mashpia in the community. That's
not correct. I'm not going to
argue. Well, what do you think the Lubavitcher Rebbe would agree with?
With you, not with me. But I'm entitled to my opinion, please. As you will see, I'm not a chassid. I'm an admirer. But a chassid I'm not. My Rebbe would agree with you too. But if I listened to my Rebbe, I would be there, not here. And
well,
I would
maybe
be,
this is what you're going to
be. And I would be one millionth of what I am today. Okay? In knowledge.
Maybe
please.
Opposite. Just to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, please. You can play devil's advocate with but there's a reality to life. You want to make...
Maybe Rav Lichtenstein would have been much bigger in America.
Baruch Hashem. You want to make the world from a... Put a kippah on Netanyahu's head. You have no idea the impact.
Just making a point.
Okay, it's okay, Alex. You have every right to disagree, but I have a right to my opinion too, particularly on that topic. Anyway, I just wrote about it this afternoon. That the great, I'm ending off a piece on Meir Kahana, my Rebbe in Zionism. So you know, Meir always called attention the conflict between. The Declaration of Independence, the Jewish state and a democratic state. No, either or, entweder or. But I say the greatness of democracy, see this is where I have my own opinion, you must always work within the system. These concept of Siruf Pekuda can end the country, because every Jew here thinks he's a god, thinks he knows all the answers. But within the system, because it's a democracy, it reflects the population. And there's been a sea change. And you know how I end off my piece in Mayo? I just wrote it this afternoon. I just finished it when I woke up at 2 o'clock. I end off, the greatest proof is from Mayo's own family. And I quote, a volume came out a year ago on Rabbi Yisachar Mayo. You know who that was? Anyone know? Gentlemen, if you know the name of Yisachar Mayo, please make believe you do so. The ignorant pass for the wise. Rabbi Yisachar Mayo built the Negev. He took from Panovich, went down to the Negev and built Yeshivat Azat, it was called. Now it's called Yeshivat HaNegev. And that's from Yisachar Meir. He, by the way, he spoke perfect English. He married a girl from London, and he lived in, or may have lived in Britain for a while. He was of German origins. And in Nebuch, a hard life, but that we were sick with diabetes from childhood on, and what he did, what he accomplished. And a lot of his students were graduates of Yeshiva Tichoniyat. So in 1970, a very good student comes over to him and says, Rebbe, I want to go into the army now. I've learned, but I have to serve the country. And he says to him, you want to go into the army? No, you should continue learning. It's for you much more important. And he says, in the army, what will become of you? You can't advance there because you're religious, because you're Rei Shemayim and a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. I'm quoting Yisachar's words as quoted in this book. I give the exact source. And take a look today, 2016, a close blood relative of Meir Kahana is a brigadier general in the Israel Defense Force. And he's not the only one of the senior officers, many with kippah. So that's the greatness of democracy. Now, coming back here, take a look, a woman, middle ages, the women put on makeup. What does Shir Shirim talk about? Spices, makeup, the Gemara. There's a Gemara that says even a woman with 1 foot, I don't want to quote the Gemara, 1 foot gone, she's still putting on makeup. Fabulous. Wow, here you have Mesiach Lefi Tumo. This is a fabulous proof that don't let anyone tell you in the Middle Ages everyone was sad, no one put on makeup, there was no music, there was no joy, there was no dance, there was no zest to life. Isha Makusheter, oh boy, not the way our wives go. My daughters and my wife, they're from Gush Emunim, they don't put on that much makeup. It's a different belief, a different lifestyle altogether. But these women with a proper shaitel, oh boy, human hair, with makeup that you can put on Shabbos that lasts for 24 hours, what they've invented today. And this is not nice. And he quotes the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Nun Bet, Isha me'azara minayin, pen yit geruba p'yichei kuhuna. Wow. That p'yichei kuhuna, we're talking rabbis, we're talking tzaddikim, we're talking kohanim. But what can I tell you? Thank God. Sex remains sex. You understand? You can't change Chazal. They had such insight. Rafi got married. Thank God. If there wouldn't be sex in the world, you have to marry, you have to support a woman, a stranger, the children. He doesn't sleep at night today, right or wrong? You sleeping yet? What's happening?
Sometimes.
Natan. Thank God the world still is attracted by an Isha Mekushetet. Pirchei Kohuna, but not in a shul, not where the Shechina is present. And the Marami Ruttenberg goes on and he says, after all, the woman has no chiyuv to do the Brit Milah. It's the man. Avram Avinu was commanded. Tziva oto, oto velo ota, umi sheyesh biyado limchot yimche, vahamachmir tavo alav bracha. Wow, 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 what a tshuva. Alex, when someone from Chovevei Torah corners you with this tshuva, you better be able to handle it.
That doesn't seem like a great kasha.
You got to be able to handle it. I don't know. A tshuva from the Tashbetz HaKatan. Unbelievable. No, Rami Ruttenberg, well, he goes further. You see what happens here. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but I understand the Tashbetz is a singular figure in Jewish history. But when Rami Ruttenberg, are there any other Rishonim that say this?
And you can just as easily say that a lot of the other opinions that you're relying on are
I will only tell you that other Rishonim, I don't know of anyone else who discusses. Yomo, do a search on the Bar Ilan computer if anyone else discusses a woman being a Sanda Ka'it. I don't know of anyone. It was just taken for granted. But today, the Lindenbaum crowd says clearly, why can't we be? What's wrong? It's my son. Example. It's my grandson.
So you can also just say,
Okay, Moshe, you don't have to convince me, but I want to show you.
This is not just about feminist issues. This is the same kind of logic of like, we who are not really, really oriented to the Masorah and don't really have the same value bases and the underlying theological, and I don't like to use the term halakha, I talk about what I call theological halakhic system.
Well, what you're saying is Masorah.
And then you know, some random person finds like some weird shita in a Rishon somewhere right. That's never been found.
No, I agree with you. You can't find, you can't go back to Yosef Glili and say chicken and milk is mutter. But not only that, so his student writes that I tried desperately to stop the practice and people don't listen to me. And he says, and listen to this, even though they're busy with the Mila, but Shilil, it's a woman, it's distracting. And even if you'll say, well, maybe it's the Mohel's wife, no, this is family, but people don't know that. People don't know it's the wife. And here he gives a psak, V'cholish hayarei devach Hashem, yesh lo latzeit mi beit ha-kneset, pen yireh, Kimisayeya Yedei Ovrei Amvei Bra. And what an important sentence, that if you happen to come to a Brit Mila where a woman is the Sanda Ka'at, you should walk out, because if you remain, it means the Purushim are agreeing with this practice. And he goes on and on, and he quotes the Maharam Rutenberg again and again, that this is against our way of life. He quotes the Gemara where, if you, where you walk in the Gemara in a Ruvn Daf Yud Chet, Manoach Amaretz Hayah Dektiv Vayelech Manoach Acharei Ishto. And that the man has to take the lead. The man is the mohel. The man is the sandik. V'shalom. Meir b'Reb Baruch. What a tshuva. What a source. And now you can understand why Menashe HaKotel walked out of the hotel. He walked in. There was no separate seating. Or there was no mechitza. And he felt if he would speak, Misayeya Yedei Avera. And this source from the Tashbetz is critical. The woman has no place in the Beit Knesset. How do you give a lecture? You're asking about crocheting, about knitting, and I'm worried about the woman coming in. But we're going to go further. Yes, Moshe.
Now, I not to give credence to something that Tadbates just says is wrong, but look, in a crowd where certain sensitivities need to be met, and not to say a halachic need, where there's a halachic need, there's a halachic way. If within a halachic parameter something is
What you're saying is you're saying sensitivity. So I'll tell you a little story. In the shul where my children daven, who live near me, the shul that my son-in-law is the president for many years, my grandchildren helped run it until today. And it's a weekend shul. All week the building is a senior citizen's. It's a very valuable piece of property. It's owned by the city. It's on Rehov Palmach. It was a corner with a beautiful yard around it. So on that shul, a Kohen who was a survivor went through the hell of hells, davened. He was a little man, had gone through hell. He finally married a lady late in life from the Eidat HaMizrach, quite a bit younger. They had four sons. He was not totally religious. He was more traditional. But he came with the kids to shul. I remember Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I would see all the children. They were Kohanim. All four have doctorates, very high achievers. Some are MDs, some are PhDs. None of them, I believe, are really Shomrei Torah Mitzvah, unfortunately. So one of the boys got married. It was a very big simcha for the mother. He finally got married, not young. And at the wedding, a rabbi was there from Tzohar. Now, this kid has a PhD from Hebrew, I believe it is in Jewish philosophy. And he's reached the conclusion that conservative of reform approach is correct. And this rabbi from Tzohar is Masada Kedushin. He has the approval of the chief rabbinate. In other words, he's able to do it. And they had one of the brachot, or two of the brachot, were read by a woman. And there were other compromises too under the chuppah. The people who were there from the shul were very upset because these are proper religious Jews. Well, this is exactly what you're saying, sensitivity. Where do you draw the line?
No, but there's a
you follow? Yeah,
can we also call a spade a spade and say sometimes you're validating Yetzer Hara, and then all it does is wound up creating bigger problems?
No. Call a spade a spade is to say that this is not acceptable to traditional Judaism, to Torah Judaism, to Masorah. But when you get involved with sensitivity, you're getting involved in a very, very gray area.
And
I have to tell you, draw the line is exactly the word. What can you accept? What can't you accept?
So if the Torah, on a separate level, we're not talking about a dayan or a witness.
Yeah, but you're talking.
Why did they talk about Devorah? Because it doesn't say that she ever was a dayan.
Not to say you're written.
She was an arbitrator. It doesn't say anything else.
Kiblu aleihem. Tosfos already raises the problem.
So, but the Torah itself already says that Moshe's sons were given their breasts by their mother, and not only that, it wasn't necessarily like at that point it wasn't necessarily the Torah wasn't given. So you could either say that the Torah wasn't given, therefore they were doing
it. It's called the Matan Torah. By the way, a lot has been written on that topic. It could be the evidence if a woman did a Brit Mila that it is. A lot has been written. You'll see. You'll see already. That's a topic that's not esoteric. But anyway, Moshe, listen to me. What you're raising is a very valid issue and sensitivity. So this is a question, where can you and where can't you? When the women wanted to speak under the chuppah, if I had my choice, I would say no. It's not, this is a kvod bat hamelech penima, but there I felt sensitivity to the mother of the Kala. If she's a famous personality that's been written up in Makor Rishon time after time, and she's not a chadalnik, she's on the other side of the coin. So, all right, I let her speak. But with the ktuva, I refuse. So, you're right, sensitivity plays a role, a big role. The rabbi from Tzohar probably allowed what he allowed because of sensitivity. Am I happy? Were my children happy? Were the balabatim happy from the shul? Absolutely not. My daughter.
That's also, not everything is just like, well, it's a gray area, quantitative. There are also certain categories. Allowing women to speak in public is not the same as doing some ritual function.
Beseda, I'm well aware of it, and we're dealing here with a gray area, and as I've said so many times, the issue of feminism is like a pregnant woman. It's going to take 99 years till we come to definitive lifestyle, which will be in consonance with halacha, and which will enable the feminist mystique to express itself in a way that they feel is proper. Let me go further.
Why wouldn't we say that this is yet another ideology from the secular world that contradicts Torah?
Very simple. Alex, if they say the daughters of Rashi put on tefillin, you understand? You're dealing here with women. No. Don't say they're doing it lahachas. They're doing it because they're seeking, they're searching. They want to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. I challenge the point on many, many different levels. I don't think that's true. I think a lot of this is coming from, but I'm talking about... First of all, I think a lot of this stuff is coming from amoratzis because people are not... They don't know Jewish theology. They know halakha in a micro-halakha way, colored by the Haskalah.
You're absolutely right, but I'm talking... A woman in Michalah comes to me before you were born and she says she must put on tefillin. I had a terrible problem. And she quotes to me all the sources, Michal Bat Shaul and everything that goes with it. We have
great holy women in the door. We have Rebbetzin Kanievsky. We have all these holy women. Is there any indication that any of these unbelievable holy women, even in private,
But we're talking about this woman who's saying. Anyway, I spoke with Rabbi Lichtenstein. We had a long chat, and Aaron and I both agreed. And I'll say Aaron led the way. I'm his evid, and we both agreed that if I felt that she would leave Yiddishkeit, if she didn't, she should put it on quietly and not make it into a public stunts. And that's what I told her. Anyway, this woman did put on tefillin, did daven, and I met her many years later with 4 or 5 children, her head covered. I was very happy with the psak. But let me go further. These issues we're not going to solve overnight. It's an ongoing process.
But I think a lot of these areas where people have used that logic has completely backfired. All these areas, years ago, even when I was first becoming observant, I saw these things stirring. Okay. And I said, nope, that's bad news. And now it's blown up.
But the question is, people should reflect a little and say, no, it might have been a mistake. Believe me, there's a big mistake here, but you're not going to stop it because it's a chai v'kayam, and I call it neoconservatism,
right,
period.
Right.
Okay, but let me go one step further.
Quote from the Tashpetz Katan of the Makom, the whole quote that you read out was based on the fact that Makom Bet Knesset or Bet Midrash is not Makom Isha.
Right. So you're saying in a private house, in a private house, it might be more proper.
This is exactly what I wanted to ask.
I have been to many different families.
Sfardi Britot are generally in Ulamei Smuchot.
Right.
Right? Does this mean that the Maram of Mahmoud would not object to that if it was not a shul?
I can't answer. I thought of that too, that if you have it in a private house. Yeah.
My brother's firstborn, my nephew, married a woman of Persian and Tunisian descent. And when his son was born, they had the Brit in the shul at the time they live in, and the uncle of the mother from the Sephardi side said that he loved the Ashkenazi practice of having a Brit in a shul. He had tried to persuade his family with Britot on his family's side to do this without success, so he was very happy to be that particular Brit. So the whole thing of Maharam seems to be based on the presence of the woman.
There's no question that you see from the Maharam, from the Tashbetz HaKatan, that the Nohag then was to have the Brit in the shoe, period. That's what you see clearly.
That's all Ashkenaz. We're talking Ashkenaz.
Number two, you see that evidently was more than a batul b'miyot. It was something already miyatanika, where women were the sandakayat. But in a private house, if you ask me, I also would say no, that a woman can't be a sandakayat. It's not proper, it's not traditional. But you can certainly make more of the case that there it's in private, it's not the shul. But again, it's men and women mixed, etc. Reb Menashe Klein wouldn't be happy. I personally wouldn't be happy, but b'di'avad, it could be, you're absolutely right that it's a lot better than in a shul. Okay, anyway, he uses that sauce, which is really an epic-making sauce, in my opinion. Yomo, see if you find any other discussion. It would be very interesting. So he says, you see how it's a Brit Miller, it's her grandson, her husband's the Mal, her son is the Mal. And the Marami Rittenberg is very opposed to her coming into the shul. Fine. Then he goes into a different problem. This problem is something that you could actually do a master's thesis, if not more, on. A great deal has been written. It's been discussed in public in modern times. He goes into the whole problem of the Nidah entering the synagogue. Now, we all understand that a menstruant woman is has a din of tameyah, to use that language. If you translate it into impure, it's very offensive to women today. So you have to come up with a more fine-tuned translation, which frankly...
We're impure.
Please, we're all impure, I understand, but we're all tameyah tim. But I don't know, I prefer to use the Hebrew word because it has halachic connotations, and as Alex said, we're all tamei meitim.
It's also not a correct translation.
So it's not... It's not... Yeah, but what would be a good translation? There isn't. Impurity is what they used in the Torah. Okay, fine in the translations. But this is a very interesting question. Now, you can check out all the sources. You will find that in the Hasidic world, the minhag was for women not to go to shul. And this is right, it's almost across the board that women simply didn't go to shul. My wife's family is Hasidic origins, Meshbetz, and her grandmother, who was a tzaddiket, and these are people who remained from living in America from the 1880s until they died in the 1960s, remained firm. I think Rosh Hashanah, she went to shul to hear Tkiyat HaShofar. And I don't know, I asked my wife, did I go on Yom Kippur? Malka couldn't answer me. And of course, there's no one to ask. That whole generation is gone. We are la halacha, we are matir for women to enter the shul. The reason we are matir is for tefillah. You look in, you can find all the sources. Say, I don't want to start giving you all the sources in the Orech Chaim, but you'll see the psak of the Ramah. And this has to do with what Moshe said a minute ago. A woman has a need to pray. She wants to go into the shul. This is why in all the shuls that we uncover, some you'll find no place for women, and some you'll find a separate room where you had a woman who led the women in prayer, like a chazanit. Why did a woman lead the women in prayer? Because the women couldn't read. And this woman knew how to read, so she would say the prayers aloud, and the women would follow her. And here, this practice is widespread. Even in Europe, in every large shul, they built a women's section, even in Hungary, even among the Hasidim, even if women didn't come regularly, but there was a place for them to daven. But he raises the issue. Here you're talking about women coming into the shul where they're not coming to daven, where they're coming to hear lectures. This, he says, we don't have a chetta for. Here it's a chamachlekes, we shine him, so much has been written, b'di'evad, we're matir, tvila, a personal deed, and we're mekil, but b'litam tvila, lama natilahem. And this is Reb Menashe Klein continuing. And here I want to end off the class. I want to tell you something that happened with the Rav. And it can be checked out with the family. It was a whole story with people from Maria who were among the Rav's big supporters. And you know what Maria was. Again, I have to For those of you who don't know, when the Rav became the Rav and became so famous, a lot of Jews in New York felt very bad that he's in Brooklyn, in Boston. It's like it's a waste. The heart of Yiddishkeit is New York. It's like Alex just said, imagine, Rebbe, what you could have accomplished had you remained at Yeshiva University in Washington Heights, all right? I just wrote about that today when Mayor Kahana criticized the Frankfurt community, wrote about that last night, I should say, criticized the Frankfurt community for remaining in Washington Heights and how Rabbi Breuer took him on in public. Rabbi Breuer is his president, Rafael, Dr. Rafael Muller, the great-grandson of Rav Hirsch, took on mayor in public for implying that living in Washington Heights is not the ultimate ideal. Okay, so they felt the Rav should be in New York. So they organized the synagogue. It's one of the few times in the history of Torah in America where a synagogue was organized around a rabbi. It's like Kehillat Adat Yeshurun in Washington Heights, which was organized around Rabbi Yosef Breuer. He should have a place to daven and hang his hat. And that's why you matzliach, because the synagogue was organized around him. So here you have a whole group of balabatim from the diamond industry, many of them from Belgium, very well-to-do. A few were from Egypt, very well-to-do. And the Egyptians already haben geredet a geschmacke Yiddish, they had to speak Yiddish. Because the whole diamond industry, Mazlum Bracha, you already have rulings in American courts when they shake hands and say Mazlum Bracha, it concludes the deal, it concludes the transaction. So they came to the Rav and they organized a synagogue in Moria around him. And of course, the Rav, this began, I have the exact years in my biography of the Rav. It began, if I recall correctly, the late 50s into the 60s into the 70s. Of course, towards the end, the Rav already no longer had the strength, was no longer capable. It's, you grow older, you have limited energies. But the Rav in his prime, every Tuesday night, Tuesday afternoon, he gave a shir in Yeshiva, in Yeshiva Yisrochan, NYU. At night, he gave a shir in Moria for the Balabatim. Wednesday, he gave another shir in the yeshiva, went back to Boston. Saturday night, the famous talk on the Parshat HaShavua, and Sunday morning, the Chevra Shas in Boston. And this, more or less, was his formal teaching schedule. So, by the 70s, questions came up. And one of these women who were close to the Rav, from one of the founding families, asked the Rav about women dancing with a Sefer Torah, carrying a Sefer Torah on Simchat Torah. And the Rav told her in no uncertain terms, absolutely forbidden. And she asked the Rav why, and the Rav, as only the Rav could speak, got very excited. Nothing to do with Nida, nothing to do with Nida. From the point of view of Nida, she can carry a Torah, she can dance, she can come into the synagogue. It has to do with Kedushat Beit HaKnesset and the Mesorah, how Jews have treated the synagogue, our method, our Seder, our decorum from time immemorial. And he wouldn't allow women to dance with a Sefer Torah. And at that time, in 1970, they listened to the Rav B'dechilu Urechimu. It's not like Rakefet. Last summer, here's a Talmud of his telling, Rebbe, your Rebbe is no longer applicable, no longer contemporary. He functioned last in the 1970s. Times have changed. So you see, on that level, what Rabbi Menashe Klein is paskening la halacha, that neither is not the problem, but it's more a question that we're matir le tefila, but not for anything else. Tefila, not tefilat nida, but tefila b'tzibur, tefila with the kihila, davening. That's another reason why he wasn't happy. Okay, the best is yet to come. You will see Rabbi Menashe Klein next week. The problems he raises, and I have to tell you, we can have a smirk on our faces from today to tomorrow. but the problems are so real. And I'll make an analogy to Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and a similar question. By the way, the story I just told you with the Rav and the lady who bothered him about women carrying a Sefer Torah, the source of the story, and he's spoken about it, he's written about it, is that lady's son-in-law. He's a very prominent rabbi on the West Coast, the senior rabbi in the Los Angeles area, Rabbi Elazar Muskin of the Young Israel of Century City. He's a very fine Rav, and you can check it out with him. He published about it, he speaks about it, and he always quotes his mother-in-law, how the Rav got all excited. Nothing to do with Nida. It has to do with Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. So what did we do today? All right, we went a little further in the tshuva. The heart of the shiur was the Tashbetz HaKatan, the Maram Rutenberg, the story they tell, and all the implications. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, also, I'm heading into very fascinating material with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, with the outreach, with the non-judgmental, with the people who are being outreached to, how they react, and then we're sailing in to a critique of Lubavitch that many of my students out in the field are waiting to hear impatiently, because they feel the Rebbe has been too positive in his she'urim. So we'll get to the critique, and we will handle it Be'ezrat Hashem. We're going to dab Marv in 1 second. Michael, do me a favor, give that to Yitz. If anyone is interested, this is from the New York Times. Obama honors American Gentiles who just were declared Hasidei Umat Olam for Jews they served in World War II. This is a riot. I once was at a hall at a wedding in New York, people getting married there from Jews, an Italian hall. Statues of nude women covered up when religious Jews have a wedding. This is New York Times, Italians mock cover-up of nude statues for Iranians' visit. The president of Iran visited, they covered up the statue, same thing. This is an unbelievable article from the New York Times magazine on locksmiths who pick your pocket, and it's lo aleinu, mainly Israelis working the crowd in the United States. What a racket. This is about Douglas Jr., who halachically is not Jewish, and Michael Douglas has found his Jewish roots, and he goes around all over preaching about the greatness of the state of Israel. This is about, 1 second, about Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein, who's now not only courting the Protestant revivalist, but black churches as well in favor of Israel. And here, if anyone wants, pictures of the Rav and Rav David Lishitz. And gentlemen, Michael, everyone take a sitter and let us daven Maariv.